This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Hi, reader. I'm Cindy Burnett. Welcome to my award-winning podcast, Thoughts from a Page, which is a member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. On the show, I chat with authors whose books I have enjoyed about their new releases, and I give you a peek behind the curtain of the publishing industry with my Behind the Scenes series. With so many books coming out weekly, it can be hard to decide what to read, so I find the best ones and share them with you. If you're looking for a community of readers, bonus content, and a chance to read books before they hit the shelves, I hope you'll consider joining my Patreon group, which is filled with a wonderful bunch of book lovers. The link to join is in the show notes. Today, I am chatting with Megan Friedlander and Luca Doty about Audrey Hepburn in Paris. As soon as I saw this book, I knew I had to read it. It has the most stunning photo of Audrey on the cover, and you're going to get to hear all about how the cover came to be in this interview. I'm a huge fan of both Audrey and Paris, so this book was right up my alley. Megan Friedlander is not your average millennial Audrey fan. Her blog, Rare Audrey Hepburn, quickly became the golden rule for anyone interested in the best narrative and unseen images of the timeless star we all love, including Audrey's son, who specifically chose Megan for this project. Audrey Hepburn in Paris is her first book. She resides in California. Luca Doty is the son of Audrey Hepburn and Italian psychiatrist Professor Andrea Doty, and the author of Audrey in Rome and Audrey at Home. He lives in Rome with his wife and children. I hope you enjoy this delightful conversation.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, Megan and Luca. How are you two today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having us.
I'm doing fine. Also, thank you for having me.
Good. I thought before we dove into my questions about the book, I might let the two of you introduce yourselves because this is a little bit of a different interview. And so people know who you are and what's happening here, I thought we'd do that. So Megan, would you like to start?
Sure. My name is Megan Friedlander. I am the curator of the website Rare Audrey Hepburn, and I also have an Instagram account. And I wrote this book, Audrey Hepburn in Paris, with the help of Luca. And we've been friends since about 2011. That's when we first met. I started my blog in 2010. And I don't remember how it started, the chicken and the egg, who met who first, who reached out to who. But we started a friendship. And over the years, we helped each other. You know, Luca would help with my blog answering questions for fans. And over the years, I would help him answer questions regarding photographs of his mother and helping him get in touch with different estates. And then in 2020, I got a call from Luca and he said, let's write this book on Audrey Hepburn in Paris. And I said, absolutely. And that's how we came to be. That's why we're here today.
Luca, how about you? Will you give me your backstory?
Yes, my name is Luca Doty. I'm the youngest son of Audrey Hepburn. And I'm a part-time writer. This is my third book with HarperCollins. And my editor wanted, because the previous one, Audrey at Home, did very well. So for years, she was hunting me down for a new project. And the thing is, that's why I say part-time, because I do it when I enjoy it. I do it when I find it fun and fascinating. And for sure, Paris was an ideal place because there are a lot of connections. We're going to discuss that later. But compared to my previous books, I wanted a new twist. And that is Megan. And why Megan? Because she's a great writer. She's a great investigator, photo collector. But also she comes, and what that is the most interesting thing for me, she comes from a younger audience following my mother. So, and an audience that has generally a very fresh and sort of 360 degrees look on my mother, you know, not only focusing on fashion or her movies, but very interesting in her life and how she lived. And I find it challenging for both of us to work as a team beyond the blog. You know, the blog can it's a fantastic tool, but it's very somehow solitary. You know, you just you shoot bullet by bullet, but while a book, it's more like a circus, as we both realized in the process. And that's how we started the collaboration.
Well, it's a beautiful book. I had so much fun poring over the photos, and not only of Audrey Hepburn, but also there were so many others, Cary Grant, Sean Connery, Princess Grace, a young Peter O'Toole. So it was delightful to see all of them, particularly all of the photos of Audrey, obviously, but I enjoyed seeing everybody that was pictured as well.
Thank you. I mean, it took us years, not just to track down the photos, but to also find out who the photos were by, to find out where the estates were, to negotiate the photos. So we're very proud of all the pictures in the book.
Well, that's going to be one of my questions, is talking about getting the rights to use them. But before we do that, let's back up a tiny bit. First, tell me a little more about your blog, Megan, and then let's talk about the book generally. You mentioned a little bit about it, Luca, but just sort of the main idea of the story.
Well, I started my blog in 2010, and I didn't really have a purpose for it. My friend just said, you know, there's this website called Tumblr, and I think you would like it. So I checked it out, and I created a Tumblr, and I decided, well, I'll just do something on a topic that I like, which is Audrey Hepburn. And over the years, I had been collecting articles on Audrey and photographs, and so I had this small little archive of my own, and I thought, well, this is a place that I can put it and organize it online, and that other people can enjoy it. And I never thought it would get the attention that it did. But over the years, more and more people started flocking to my blog, and because of that, it started to grow, and I started to answer questions about Audrey and write think pieces about Audrey and just share stories that I had read over the years and trying to introduce Audrey to different generations and not just talk about her movies and the clothes she wore, which are also very important and I do love discussing, but also about the woman behind the icon. That was what my main intention was. And then from there, it's grown. You know, I'm mostly on Instagram now. I still have my website, but, you know, as technology changes and social media changes, I have to go along with the flow. And so I'm on Instagram. And it's also very interactive because I talk to all the fans, all the Audrey Hepburn fans that communicate with me. I'm constantly in my DMs answering questions and connecting with them. And so when I wrote this book, I myself was writing it as a fan of Audrey Hepburn, but I was also writing it with all the knowledge that I had over the last 14 years of connecting with different fans online and hearing what they love about Audrey and the questions that they had about her. So I kept that in the forefront of my mind with every single chapter, with every single photograph. I kept thinking, is this something that Audrey Hepburn fans would want to know about? As well as, is this something, are these photos that they would love to see, photos that hadn't been seen before? And so that was something that was, that you'll see in the book. It's very prominent.
And then Luca, you played a role in all of that. You all worked together toward getting the book finalized?
Yes, of course. I want to add something about how Megan works, which is very important for me in the sense that, well, let's go back to 2011. That was the first ever exhibit on my mother that I curated for UNICEF. And I was at that time, and I'm still am in to a certain extent, much more oriented and towards the real Audrey, and a little bit allergic to the iconic one, you know. So what I found through Megan and through this community that she's part of is that this young community is that, as I do, they are much more interested on the person than on the icon. It's their Audrey, but they wanted to be as much closer to reality as they, and they're very picky about that. You know, they can immediately feel if something is marketing oriented or if it's true. So there are a lot of books that come out regularly on my mother with glasses, my mother with hats, my mother and this and my mother with that, and calendars and mugs. And of course, that covers a part of the market. But not being interested in that, I wanted really to work with Megan because I know, and that was a request for me, that I know that she can be at the same time very personal and very respectful. So that was fantastic. And basically, well, she said that we did it together. She did the big part of the heavy load. And I tried to help as much as possible. And, you know, sometimes is connecting to an archive, sometimes to a person connecting. Of course, I gave her access, full access to her family archive and things like that. And it worked very well. The book was very challenging, but I say it worked very well, not only because, well, the final result is very good, but we are still friends, which is not...
which doesn't always happen, yes. Well, and the focus of the book is Audrey Hepburn in Paris, as it's entitled. So tell me how you decided to link up those two. Obviously, she has such a connection to Paris, but what made you decide to have that focus in the book?
Paris was very interesting. As you said, there are many connections, but there was also a sort of a question that needed an answer. Beside the fact that she did a lot of movies in Paris or about Paris, that her look were Parisians, her best friend, designer, Hubert de Givenchy, lived in Paris. A lot of friends of her lived in Paris, and she adored Paris. She never lived there. She never had her apartment. She never chose to be there. So initially, that was an interesting point, you know, because as I said in my previous book, Rome and At Home were intimate and places where she lived and where I had experiences with her. Not so much Paris. So there was not a doubt. I had at the beginning, I said to Megan, and I sort of freaked her out, saying, like, you know, I'm not totally sure that we have a real story behind, you know, she did this movie and she did this. And that was the big, big surprise of the book, and also Megan's talent, because she managed to dig and hurten and mix the situations in a way that you can approach this book in so many ways. Being a fan, not being a fan, it's interesting as a guide to Paris. It's interesting as an inner look towards my mother. Most of all, for me, this is a very personal take. It's interesting as Paris in that moment in time, in those decades just after the war, the vibrancy, really, there's only one word, the magic.
Yeah, going off of what Lucas said, when he did contact me, he said, I want you to write this book, Audrey Hepburn in Paris. And I was so excited because I thought, oh, two of my favorite topics. And I mean, this is Audrey in Paris. This is what Audrey is known for, her Parisian style, her movies in Paris. And I thought, how has this book not been written yet? And then he said, but I'm not sure there's enough information for a book. And then I thought, well, that's not what I want to hear, you know, and my heart sank a little bit. And he said, because the truth is that my mother never chose to make a home in Paris. And I thought, oh, that's right. I guess I never really put that together. She lived in Switzerland and she lived in Rome and she worked in Paris, but she never decided to, you know, plant roots in Paris. So I got together with, you know, a small group of my friends. One of them was Lisa Petukova. I reached out to her and she's someone who has an Audrey Hepburn account too called Timeless Audrey Hepburn. And I said, would you like to help me research this book? Because I knew that there was probably going to be a lot of information. And there was. We spent the first full year just researching the book. I mean, we scoured the internet for every newspaper archive under the sun, whether it was in Dutch, Italian, French, English, Japanese, Icelandic, whatever. We found it, we translated it. And the same with finding articles online and going through our own separate articles, because my friend Lisa also has her own archive. And that's how we became friends. And so we went through every magazine we could find, every article we could find. We found photographs from our own collections and then photographs from past auctions. And that's how we were able to come up with all this information so that I could put together an outline and a timeline and then put together the table of contents and then start writing the book. Because truthfully, there was so much information. When my editor first presented the book to me, she said, you know, we want the book to be around 25,000 to 35,000 words. And I said, oh, wow, that's a lot of words. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. And then when I handed in the manuscript, it was 60,000 words and 25 chapters. And so I felt like there could have been another volume, but I really tried to put as much information into this one manuscript or into this one book.
And you mentioned trying to get the rights to all the photos. That was one of the things that I just loved about the book, was so many photos I hadn't seen before. So how was that?
Well, that was a challenge. And that took years, because one thing about my account, it's called Rare Audrey Hepburn. And so my intention with my account was to post rare photographs of Audrey Hepburn. So I knew that if I did this book, I would want to have unseen, unpublished photographs in the book. I didn't want to just go to the same stock image sites and buy the photographs that people have been posting online and in books for years. But I will tell you, it was a challenge. And there were times where Luca wasn't just my friend, he was my therapist, because there was just so many hurdles and obstacles that we had to overcome. And I mean, one in particular were the photographs of Audrey that are in the Hotel Raphael chapter. I had seen those photographs in two separate articles or two separate magazines. One was French, one was Italian, both published in February of 1956. And I saw those photographs and I thought, oh, those are perfect. You know, they help tell the story. I have a story in the chapter about Audrey Hepburn being on the phone with the concierge and asking for a specific table that she wanted for her room. And there's a photograph of Audrey on the phone. So you can visualize the story as it's happening. Same thing with talking about how she had records that she would bring with her whenever she traveled. And there's Mel Ferrer, you know, holding a record in his hand. The only problem was, is that in both these magazine articles, neither one mentioned who the photographer was. So that took me on a journey that lasted nearly 3.5 years trying to find these photographs. So I reached out to Luca and Luca said, let me get you in touch with a friend of mine who has an archive in Italy. He might know more. Luca reached out to him and the guy wrote back and said, let me look into this. I'll see what I can find. And so we didn't hear back from him for a couple of months. But then when we did, he said, you know what? I may know who the photographer is. I'm going to get you in contact with their archives. So we reached out to them and they said, oh, you know, these photographs are not by this particular photographer, but we might know someone else who knows who they are. So, I mean, that kept happening over and over and over again. And then finally, we came across this one archive and they said, oh, yeah, let me look through our archives to see, because they had the photographs from one of the particular magazines. And that doesn't always happen. A lot of time these archives either get thrown out or something happens, like the old archives were caught on fire and nothing survived. But they went into their archives and there were the original photographs with the photographer's stamp on the back. And that's how we found out that they were by Per Olo Anderson. And they said, you can use these photographs, but you have to get permission from his estate. And I thought, oh, we're so close. We're just there. So I reached out to his estate because I was able to find his son online. And he said, yes, absolutely. We've been looking for these photographs for years. And I said, well, I'll give you the photographs and in exchange, we'll use them in the book. And so since then, I've formed a friendship with his son and we've stayed in touch. And anytime I find photographs by his father, I send him his way. And that's how we got those photographs. But it did take a good 3.5 years. And I'm so grateful for it because they're in the book. They haven't been published in over 60 years. And they really help tell the story.
So many photos are like that in the book. I mean, I have no idea in terms of how long they've been published or not been published because I'm not as familiar with it as you are. But there are so many photos that I had not seen before. And I love that. And I love Paris. So as Luca mentioned before, I think the book is great for fans of Audrey Hepburn, but also fans of Paris, fans of fashion from that time period. I think it will appeal to a wide variety of people.
Oh, I hope so. That's what we were going for with this book, is that it wasn't just about Audrey. It was about fashion. It was about Paris. It was about glamour, romance, nostalgia, you know, old Hollywood, just everything.
So, Luca, you mentioned something that surprised you about the book, but what else surprised you? When you were working on this, Megan, and then Luca, as you were working with Megan, did certain things take you aback or surprise you, things you didn't expect?
Well, one thing that didn't surprise me, but I wanted to Megan to dig into it. Why? And it's an aspect that still fascinates me today. And I think it's the backbone of this book and it's the backbone of that era, is that all the people that navigated around my mother, friends, designers, brands, those were all made by real people. You know, Givenchy was Hubert de Givenchy. Louis Vuitton was Monsieur Louis Vuitton. Having those big brands that now we know, you know, in the big shops, there were small ateliers looking to do the best, looking to have an occasion to be known. And it wasn't a marketing geek like everything is today. And this is something that I insisted that should be in the book, and it is in the book. And I think, like, connecting back to the story of the archives, I think that connects very well with the book. We are used today with finding everything online, and possibly if it's not online, it doesn't exist. Well, Megan demonstrated by her will and their search and the fact that there are a lot of photographs, there are a lot of stories that needs interaction with real people, families, estates. Sometimes, and quite a lot of times, those estates are not prepared to sell a photograph. They unsure of what it can cost, what kind of agreement they can do. You know, it's the opposite of like digital, where you say, you know, I want such shoes. They give you a price. You click it. You PayPal, and bye bye. And so that was not a surprise, but very refreshing. But I think, because I think that giving this aspect of the thing also, it was very close to my mother, because she always said, you know, I was just so lucky because I was in the right place at the right time, but surrounded with just the best possible people, the scriptwriter, the directors, the fellow artists, but everybody that work as an artisan on these movies is, and their stories are all in the book. So that, I think, it's something that may be a surprise for the reader. The one thing that surprised me personally is specifically in one chapter, the Little White Bites, Le Petit Lit Blanc, which was a fundraising event. And At the end, you realize that mom was dancing through the night until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I found that, because of course I lived with my mother under different thing, and so seeing her, you know, in her party years, well, that was a fun bit,
a different side to her than you were used to. What about you, Megan? Were there any surprises?
The whole book was a surprise to me. Honestly, you know, I was familiar with the photographs. I had seen many of them before. I could tell you what she was wearing, who she was with, where she was, when it happened, you know, what movie she was promoting. But there were so many stories that I hadn't involved myself in, that I hadn't researched and looked up the history of. And I was just really fascinated by all of them. You know, there was one in particular, the movie premiere for The Longest Day. And I knew that Audrey she wore her pink beaded silk Givenchy gown and was escorted by her husband, Mel Ferrer, from the Rothschilds, and that it was held at the Palais Chaillot. But I didn't realize the lengths and the money that went into the event. You know, the streets were decorated with paratroopers and tanks were lent by the French War Museum. And at midnight, Edith Piaf gave a performance on the first floor of the Eiffel Tower while fireworks blasted off overhead. And it was described that all of Paris stayed up to watch Edith sing, and Parisians were in the streets and they were craning their necks out the windows to watch her perform. And the whole night just sounded magical. And there were just little tidbits too. Like, I remember when I was researching for the chapter, Harper's Bazaar, Paris Pursuit, it was a photo shoot that Audrey did in 1959 with Richard Avedon. And there was this little clipping from a newspaper that said that Truman Capote wrote the treatment for the Harper's Bazaar fashion editorial. And I had no idea. And I've always had this fascination with Truman Capote. And right now he's very popular because of that show that's out right now with Truman Capote and his swan. You know, and when you think of Audrey Hepburn and Capote, you think of Breakfast at Tiffany's. But to find out that Audrey had acted in one of Capote's scripts a year before, even if it was just for a magazine, that kind of blew me away. And apparently what happened was that Richard Avedon had asked Capote to write the script for his fashion shoot. But after Harper's Bazaar canceled the publication of Breakfast at Tiffany's, Truman was so angry, he refused to have his name included in the magazine. So when the issue came out, his name was never mentioned and he was never credited for his work. And I never knew this. And I found it out from that old newspaper clipping that I just happened to come across from 1959. So it was just all these little facts and little details and accounts and histories that I hadn't read about that probably haven't been talked about in over 60 years that just took me by surprise. And I had such a good time. There was so much joy in writing this book. It was stressful beyond compare. But I really enjoyed the research and I enjoyed the writing. And also the other surprises were just finding these photographs and going off of what Lucas said. There was, you know, some estates that I got in contact with and they said, you know, a lot of these photographs have never even been developed. We haven't even taken them out of the archives. And they said, so if we're going to go and have them developed, I need to have your assurance that you're going to publish these photographs. And I said, no problem. I want these photographs. I'll do whatever I have to do. And so like the Sergio Strizzi photos, those haven't been published maybe ever. So it was exciting. And I'm really happy and excited that we're finally at the end and people can see all this hard work that we've been doing for the last 4 years.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, genxgrownup.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it.
Right.
Well, and speaking about photos, the cover, how did you decide that this photo would be the cover photo?
Oh, there's quite a long story behind that. Well, I'm a longtime Audrey Hepburn memorabilia collector, and I focus on vintage magazines, photographs, and negatives. And back in 2017, I had come across an auction online for Audrey Hepburn photographs and transparencies. And the photo online, it was very blurry, but I could just make out that the photo, there were Kirkland transparencies of Audrey from How to Steal a Million from 1965. So I placed a bid and I crossed my fingers and I hoped for the best. And thankfully I won. But now at the time, I wasn't sure if these were fakes or copies or what. But I had learned after contacting the Kirkland estate that not only were the transparencies originals, but that the estate didn't own them. So I showed it to Luca and Luca took one look at them and he loved them. And I knew that if Luca loved them, then we had a winner. The only issue is when we presented the transparencies to HarperCollins, they said no. They didn't like the photo because she was wearing that mask. You couldn't see her eyes. And a huge part of Audrey Hepburn's appeal is her eyes. So they rejected the idea and we came up with a different cover. And it was a cover that our hearts were never in. We didn't love it, but it worked. And then sometime in spring, there was a lot of internal conflict going on at HarperCollins, and the imprint that was publishing our book, Harper Design, was closed down, and an entire team was fired. And Luke and I didn't know for about a month. And it took a couple of months for HarperCollins to come together and to give us a new team and a new imprint. And at that time, we thought, let's get rid of the old cover and let's shoot for this one. So we presented it to them and they said, fine, you know, you can have it. And we said, yes. And so I reached out to Luca and I said, Luca, can you please reach out to the Kirkland Estate? Because, you know, you're so kind and gracious. And he did. He reached out to them and they said, yes. And so we got the photo. And in exchange, I returned the original transparency to them. So it's part of the archives now. And now we have that beautiful avant-garde, dramatic fashion photo of Audrey, where she's wearing that beautiful lace ensemble by Hubert de Givenchy. And she's photographed by Douglas Kirkland, and it's in Paris. And it just represents everything that we wanted for the book.
And may I add something? Because I think there's more to this story. And that's why I love it that this photo made it to the cover. So the attire per se with the mask is something that my mother insisted on, and Hubert de Givenchy didn't want to do, because I'm not into mask, I'm not into these things, and my mother insisted, and she got it, and she wanted a promotional shot by Douglas, and along with all the others, which are much more well known, and there as well, you know, there was criticizing, we cannot see her eyes, so she called up her makeup artist friend, and he created this makeup by individually sticking paillette to her eyelids, so to create this light behind the mask. And notwithstanding all this, marketing then again refused it. And the photograph was lost. The Kirkland Estate didn't have it. And for some reason, this archive, this collection that Megan luckily found, had it. You know, so it was a big, big surprise for the Kirkland Estate as well. He says, like, at the beginning, they asked Megan, how did you get it? Did you do this and that? And she explained, you know, there was this auction. You know, I bid and I won, and it was there. So the photo, I like to see it this way. You know, it's a romantic idea I have in my mind, but what's not romantic about Paris? The photo, my mother's will to be in that attire, it kind of sneaked its way to the surface and made it to the cover. And I think, you know, the good thing about today is that we live in a time troubled for so many aspects, but open to a lot of styles. You know, once before, the things were need to be approved by marketing, the photographs needed to be really perfect, without a blur, without a movement, without, you know. And now some photographs of the past, which were discarded because, you know, somebody in some department didn't like it, make them way to be, and they are still modern, they are still fantastic, and I think it's a perfect photograph to describe the essence of Paris, the essence of my mother in Paris, and the mystery of it all.
Well, what I liked so much about that photograph is I always enjoy looking at a cover before I read a book and then evaluating the cover afterwards. And I loved that story because she was the one that insisted that she have the mask. Givenchy didn't think she should, and she prevailed. And so then to have that on the cover, I thought, does sort of show her essence.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I need to add, because this is a very good comment you made. When she was shooting How to Steal a Million, she was herself at a crossroad. She had definitely left behind the little girl, the gamine that she kind of made her style and fame for a lot of years. She was also in trouble with her marriage. So in all these stories around at the time, and especially in Paris, I found out that her women reassurance, you know, my mother was discreet, but when she wanted something, she was able to fight for it. And later in her life, especially with UNICEF, she demonstrated that. And so in all these stories, as you perceived. It's very there's a will, there's a determination to be, you know, not the phone princess famous for weepy eyes, but, you know, a mysterious thief. And that's what she loved also in the role.
Megan, did you have something you wanted to say there? I didn't want to interrupt you if you wanted to say something.
Oh, I was just going to go off of what you were saying about how you read that story about the lace mask and then you looked at the cover and there was that connection. And that was something that was important to me throughout the book. I didn't want to just put photographs in the book that I thought were pretty and that, you know, were very stylized. I wanted each photo to help tell the stories within each chapter so that when you were reading along, you could look over to your left or to the right page and there was a photograph that was help you visualize what you were reading in the text. So that's why each photograph we chose was chosen with care and with thought. And so that's why with this photograph, we just loved it the moment we saw it, because it just encapsulated everything that we were trying to say in this book.
And then they used the font with the glittering gold, which I think matches her eyeshadow so well.
Yeah. Well, the font was, that was Luca, because he's a graphic designer.
Great. Okay, good. Good job, Luca.
I didn't design. I just picked it. It's a very famous type designer, but I didn't design the font.
No, but it's beautiful. And really, yeah, I think it's perfect.
I do too. Well, is there anything I haven't asked that you want to tell me about the book before we're done?
Just that it was a real team effort. You know, I did write the book, but Luca had his hand in every single chapter, and I'm so grateful to him for that. And that's what makes this book more evocative and intimate than Audrey Hepburn books in the past, because I had firsthand access to her son, which was almost like having firsthand access to Audrey herself. And so every time I wrote a chapter, I would send it to Luca, and then he would go over it, and then he would make little notes. And sometimes the notes were as simple as add more information about Cary Grant, add more stories about Fred Astaire. But then sometimes they were like, for example, the chapter on the Order of the Arts and the Letters, which is this very prestigious honor that the French government gives to different people who they felt helped in the arts in France in some way or another. Audrey Hepburn received it in 1987. And when I handed that chapter to Luca, I had written about how awards didn't mean a lot to Audrey Hepburn. You know, she was her own worst critic. And Luca said, I want you to really emphasize this. My mother didn't have any awards in her house, but there were a few that meant a lot to her, and this one in particular. And he started talking to me about how, you know, his mother was robbed of an education because of World War II. And then afterwards, she got straight to work after the Netherlands was liberated in 1945. She didn't go back to school. She'd never finished her education. She went right to work because her and her mother didn't have any money. And so when the French contacted her and said that they wanted to give her the commandeer, which is the highest honor that you can receive, it really took her back, because she was someone who always regarded herself as ignorant, which is something I would have never thought about Audrey Hepburn. I mean, here's a woman who could speak multiple languages. She spoke Dutch, she spoke English, French, Italian, Spanish, and German. You know, she was well-read. She was very articulate and eloquent. And I would never associate the word ignorant with her, but she was very insecure about the fact that she never finished her education. So I tried to put that into the book as best as I could, but that's something I wouldn't have known without Luca. And so there are little stories like that throughout every single chapter that I couldn't find in an interview or an article that could only come from her son. So that's why this book was, it was a team effort from beginning to end. And even now, you know, we're still going through it. And we've had a lot of rough spots along the way just because of things that were happening, like the pandemic happened, things were going on at HarperCollins. You know, certain states that we would reach out to would say, well, you can't use the photographs, or if you want to use the photographs, they're going to cost this much money. And then I looked at the price tag and I thought, my goodness, I could only afford two photographs if I bought that. But I'm so grateful to him, you know, for giving me this opportunity. And so he's very humble, and he says, you know, Megan wrote the book and Megan, talk about yourself. But truthfully, it was a team effort.
Well, I'm so glad that you both did the interview, because it's fascinating to see you interact with each other, but to also hear both of your perspectives.
Oh, well, thank you.
So I need also to add something about the book, which is very important for me, because we talked about the fact that my mother was in Holland during the war. And for people who are not aware of that part of history, and many are not, and to a certain extent, I wasn't fully aware until some years ago, that she was right in the village where the German troops were massed and they were starting their thing. So she, like so many others, she suffered and she was traumatized because of the war. Paris, this book about that time, that to our eyes may sound too glamorous, too big, too grand. As Megan said before, commenting one chapter, too expensive. Mm. To remember that for everybody involved there, those were the years after the war. The people who were there were all survivors. They wanted all to honor life, honor the possibility to again have fun, again go out in the streets, kissing each other, and doing things like that. And that was, mind you, quite a bomb, because when we started working on the book, actually immediately after, the pandemic broke out. And so there was a kind of parallel, inverted parallel. You know, we were talking about all these fantastic moments and you couldn't put on the TV and it was a tragedy that was not only around us, was with us, you know. And then I really understood the meaning of that time, you know, because I could figure out, yes, they went through a much more serious and long tragedy, more than it's difficult to express the words. My mother maybe expressed it in the best way. It's easy when you look back, knowing that the war started on one day and finished the other. Well, while you're in the middle of it, you have no idea. You think it may last a few weeks, maybe a few months, and then it's the second year and the third year, and you're in for 5 years. And when it's going to end, you may have heard that it's approaching, but you never know if you're going to make it. And so that's relativization, I don't know if it's the right word, to what the world was enduring with the pandemic. Doing this book was a great help. And I think it's relevant also to remember that all these people had this energy, this creativity, possibly also because they were talented, but also because they had this boost from the past war.
Well, and really two wars, if you think about World War II and then World War I, you know, not 20, 25 years before that. So, yes, you can understand where they were all ready to have some freedom and some creativity and to be joyful and happy that they're just around and able to do things and not hindered by the wars of the past.
Yeah, absolutely. And just going off of what Lucas said, I was so grateful for this project because I did get the call in January 2020. And then 2 months later, the pandemic hit. And, you know, we were watching the news every single day and everyone became obsessed with watching the news and watching the numbers in the corner go up and up and up. So having this book to, you know, spend my time researching, I just put my blinders on. And it was all that I did. And I would get up in the morning and I would start looking through magazine articles and translating them into Google Translate and looking through photographs and contacting estates and talking to Luca. And I was so grateful for that because I can't imagine what it had been like to have spent those years not having something positive to put my energy into. So I to this day, I will always be grateful for this opportunity.
I understand that. I launched my podcast during the pandemic. I think it was very nice to have a focus and not just be doom scrolling.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, Luca and Megan, thank you both so much. This has been an absolutely delightful conversation. I love Audrey Hepburn in Paris, and I can't wait to share this interview with my listeners.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I would love to connect with you on Instagram or Facebook, where you can find me at Thoughts From A Page. If you enjoy the show, please consider joining my Patreon group to access bonus content and support the podcast. If you have a moment to rate the show or subscribe to it wherever you listen to your podcasts, I would really appreciate it. It makes a big difference. And please tell all of your friends about Thoughts From A Page. Word of mouth does wonders to help the show grow. The book discussed in this episode can be purchased at my bookshop storefront, and the link is in the show notes. I hope you'll tune in next time.
Coming up on 5-Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5-Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.